I'm Richard Hake, filling in for Leonard Lopate. Chances are most of us woke up this morning free of thoughts of the ground opening underneath us and swallowing us up. But the fact is that sinkholes from potholes in the giant road to giant craters can form suddenly and can dramatically alter terrain and lives. On this week's Please Explain, we'll find out what sinkholes are, why they form, and whether there may be more of them than there used to be. I'm joined by Dr. Randall Orndorff, the director of the U.S. Geological Survey's Eastern Geology and Paleoclimate Science Center. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And we are inviting you, our listeners, to join our conversation. If you have a question, call us at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. You can also ask a question on our Facebook page or on Twitter. We're at Leonard Lopate. So how do geologists define the term sinkhole?
Well, sinkholes generally in the natural environment geologically are bowl-shaped depressions you see on the landscape in what we call karst terrains, K-A-R-S-T. And these are basically terrains that are underlain by rocks that are soluble. Typically, the one we think of most are the limestones, but also gypsum and salt can create sinkholes. And the main reason we get sinkholes is because there's some sort of a void underneath the Earth's surface that you can collapse or sink the various deposits into.
So are there different terms to describe different types of sinkholes?
Yes, generally we will split them into two different types. One we call cover subsidence sinkholes, and these are ones that generally occur slowly over time, over thousands of years sometimes. And it's just the slow movement of the soil above that cave or that void as it moves into that cave, and it creates kind of a subsidence or a depression on the Earth's surface. The one we're most concerned about is the second type, is what we call cover collapse sinkholes. And these generally happen in clay soils. Most sinkholes are actually not the collapse of the rock, but it's the collapse of the soil that's over the rock. So you have these cave systems. The soil is leaching down into that void, into that cave. But since the soil is clayey, it holds together very well, and you actually don't see that void underneath the ground in the soil until something catastrophic happens to create that collapse.
Now, have there always been sinkholes throughout history? Are they are just a natural part of the upper layer of the Earth's surface?
Absolutely. It's a very natural occurrence. It's been happening since as long as geology's had limestones and soluble rock, because rainwater has always been a bit acidic. And rainwater is between about 4.5 to 5.5 pH, which is acidic, not real acidic, but fairly acidic. And then as the water percolates through the soil naturally, it picks up carbon dioxide, which creates what we call a carbonic acid, and that slowly dissolves the limestone underneath.
Now, can you paint a picture for us of the layers of the Earth's crust that are central to kind of understanding the formation of sinkholes?
Sure. The very surface, of course, is where things are very active biologically. And so as things break down, biologic plants and things break down, you have a topsoil layer that's very rich in organics. Below that, you have the deeper soils, tends to be the clays and the sand, that will then sit on top of the limestone layer, the actual bedrock layer, which is in the upper part of the Earth's crust. And that transition between the soil and that limestone, since it dissolves very erratically, you get a very undulating surface between that rock and the soil.
Now, are there different types of substances or rocks that are especially prone to the collapse? John from Paramus is asking us if they occur predominantly in sandy areas.
No, actually, well, the rock types are generally limestone, what we call dolomite, gypsum, and salt. But the soils generally with the limestone, which we tend to have mostly in the humid areas in the eastern U.S., for instance, generally makes clay soils, not necessarily sandy soils. Florida, which of course is one of the areas most prone to sinkholes, you actually have a sand layer that sits on top of that clay layer on the limestone.
Now, what happens when there's an earthquake? Do sinkholes come from that?
we haven't necessarily linked sinkhole occurrences. There have been some anecdotal evidence of sinkholes occurring. I think when they had the 1964 earthquake in Alaska, there was some sinkholes that opened up in Missouri, for instance. And there was always that, or we always think about that connection, but I don't think we've ever actually made a connection between an earthquake and a sinkhole. We tend to make the links more related to weather systems.
And you mentioned this a little earlier, but what role does water play?
Water plays the biggest role because the water basically is the first ingredient to make the acid to dissolve the rock, but it's also what transports the water through the subsurface and what we call our aquifers. Also, when it comes to the sinkhole collapse itself, when we have heavy precipitation events, when you have a lot of water hitting the surface and you have this void underneath the ground and basically your soil is a bridge, when you add water to that bridge over that void, you're adding, I think a gallon of water is about 8 pounds. That's a lot of weight when you add a lot of water to it, and that will cause collapse. Also, another way water plays a role is the water table, the aquifer. If you start to lower that water table by either drought or by heavy pumping of the aquifer, you lose that buoyancy and stability of the soil and of the rock below, and we see usually large events of sinkholes happening. It's almost like flushing a toilet, basically. You're really dropping that water layer down very rapidly.
There was recent flooding in Alberta, Canada. That led to dozens of sinkholes in some major cities there. Why is that?
Well, when you have a lot of flooding, it's not necessarily in the natural karst environment. We see things related in cities when you have floods. And the human, basically our human influence also causes what we see as people call sinkholes in the urban environments. And that's basically due to erosion with the flooding. So if you have a city or a town where you have water mains, sewers, and storm drains, those are basically man-made caves or voids under the earth's surface. And when you get floods, those floods will overwhelm those sewer systems and actually erode around them or erode the pipes themselves and cause collapses the same way.
If you look at a map of the United States, which areas are most vulnerable to sinkholes and where they occur?
Sure, and just about every state in the nation has some sort of a soluble rock underlying them. About 20% of the U.S. is underlain by this karst terrain. When we think about certain areas, Florida is the first to come to mind because almost the entire state is underlain by limestone.
That's where that recent home actually went into a sinkhole.
Yeah.
And a man died.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And there's an area there that we actually call a kind of a sinkhole alley because of the interaction of just the natural environment of the limestone and the karst and the sinkholes, but also the fact that we have human influence of building or developing as our population grows out of Orlando and Tampa. And then you also have competing land use of agriculture with removing water from the system. But some other places in the U.S., the Shenandoah Valley, Great Valley in the east, up into New York, down into Alabama, the Ozarks in Missouri, Arkansas, and a lot of places out west into Nevada. But generally, the humid eastern areas are quite prone.
And as far as the ones in Florida, or compared to other ones, how deep are they usually?
They can vary. I believe the one that the gentleman fell into in Florida was about 60 feet deep. They can be as much as just a few feet deep to well over 100 to 200 feet. It really depends on the depth of the void, how large that void is, so how much soil that can take, and how deep the water table is, too.
We also had a listener, Elaine, left a comment on the show page saying she recently heard about a sinkhole which is developing in Queens, in New York. She says there's a traffic barrier in front of it, which folks are moving around as the hole grows. How common are sinkholes in the New York metropolitan area?
Unfortunately, I think they're quite in most urban areas. They're quite quite the thing, that's for sure. Again, that's that situation that occurs with our aging infrastructure. So you've got these pipes in under the cities, Washington, D.C. I know we've got quite a few of them in Washington, D.C. area, too, just like we hear in New York, where you have cracks in the water mains. And so the surface and the roads or things are collapsing into those pipes.
So would you say human activity can create a sinkhole? I mean, is that the major reason why?
That, yes, our influence can be a major trigger. That's one of the things we're looking at the U.S. Geological Survey as we learn more about sinkholes. Yes, we know that they are a natural occurrence that happen over time, but many of the large sinkholes that we're seeing, we can directly relate back to some human activities.
So if a sinkhole opens up under someone's house, does that mean that the neighbor's house is also vulnerable?
It could be. Generally speaking, when we have a collapse, it's generally a very cylindrical-looking formation when the sinkhole collapses. But Mother Nature doesn't like to be a vertical face. And so after a while, the soil will keep collapsing into the sinkhole, so it will retreat back from where that original collapse is. And until you really know how large the void was beneath the earth that's taking the soil, it's very difficult to tell how far that sinkhole will grow. Usually it's about 80% of the collapse occurs immediately, and then the rest kind of sloughs in as time goes on. But depending on how large it is, it could go for some time. So authorities will generally evacuate a lot of homes from and the folks that are in the nearby vicinity until we can make sure things will settle down.
That's what happened in that Florida case, right?
Yes, sir. So that sinkhole was not a very large sinkhole width-wise. It was deep. If you recall, they had the brother trying to rescue his brother as he went down the hole. And they had to pull him out and the police because of the risk of the continued collapse around them.
I'm speaking with Randall Orndorff, the director of the Eastern Geology and Paleoclimate Science Center at the U.S. Geological Survey. We are talking about sinkholes on this week's Please Explain. We're encouraging you to give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org, go to the Leonard Lopate Show, and of course you can go on Facebook or Twitter at Leonard Lopate. We'll be right back after our break. It's the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC. I'm Richard Hake, filling in for Leonard Lopate today. We're speaking with Dr. Randall Orndorff, the director of the U.S. Geological Survey's Eastern Geology and Paleoclimate Science Center on Please Explain today. It's all about sinkholes. And doctor, talk us through a little bit about what happens when humans extract substances from under the Earth's surface, whether it be water or oil or natural gas. Are we like leaving these kind of large voids that don't get filled in that creates a sinkhole?
Not necessarily. You know, to create the actual sinkhole or the concern with a collapse, you generally really have to have a large void of some sort for that to happen. With water extraction and oil and gas extraction, for the most part, they come from materials, these days the shale gas, for instance, are not in soluble rock. Now, they are locked up in fractures and in the pores of sand and things like that. So as you pull it out, you can get an overall subsidence of the Earth's surface, but generally it's a slower subsidence and not anything catastrophic.
Is there a way to kind of test the ground for the stability before one builds a house or excavates in the area?
Well, that's a very good question, and that's one of the things we're looking at technology-wise these days. We have what we call geophysical tools. What we want to be able to do is to look in the subsurface, just kind of like we look in our bodies and when we go to the hospital looking for MRIs and things like that. And we have some limited success in various techniques that may be able to recognize or detect some voids. But if you're able to detect it, obviously, then you don't want to build there. But the problem with that is it's an active area, and a lot of times, you know, that test is as good as the time you did it. That doesn't mean that you could not have a void occur after that. So we try to image and see if there's things there. The best thing to do sometimes, what's very expensive, is to actually drill shallow holes through the ground to see if you detect any voids that way. But that's kind of hit or miss also. So it's a very, very difficult thing to do.
We could take some listener calls at 1-212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Sean is calling from Mountainside, New Jersey. Hello, Sean. You're on WNYC.
Yes, hi. I have two questions. The first question is, if I have a doubt that there is a sinkhole in my backyard, what do I do or who do I call? The second question is, I have a small hole in the backyard and I have a swimming pool. When I pump water out of my swimming pool into that hole, the water never comes out. I mean, however many gallons I pump into it, it just keeps going in. Does that mean I should be worried?
That's an interesting question. First, yeah, who do you call if you suspect that you have a sinkhole in your backyard?
Right. Generally, you want to talk first with your local authorities. Usually, most towns, cities, and counties have some sort of engineering department that can come out and look at the situation first. You can then determine if it's geologic or if it has something to do with that's man-made. A lot of times, those little sinkholes occur because of pipelines and things like that that might be under the ground and may not be a natural sinkhole. If it is, then you want to contact a geotechnical company. You find those on the internet or in the yellow pages. They can be mitigated. Sometimes they get dug out, and if you get down to the bedrock, you can actually grout the hole with cement and actually helps slow that process down.
And as far as the question, as far as where the water's going, if you have a hole in the backyard and the water doesn't come out, where is it going?
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's going in the subsurface and probably into a, if it's in a karst area, it could be going into a cave system and then going down into the groundwater system, or probably water always likes to go downhill, even if it's underground. We do have situations where the head of the water wants to move it from one place to another. So it may be coming out in a spring miles away.
Thanks, Sean, for your call. We'll go to Dina now, calling from Columbus Circle. Hi, Dina. You're on WNYC.
Oh, hi, Bob. I just want to say I really enjoy you as a guest host. I think they should have you at least once a week.
Oh, thank you.
I really like the sound of your voice. I just two quick questions. One, how deep is a typical sinkhole? And lastly, it's so funny that you're bringing this up now at my Bible Torah class. The rabbi was saying that back in the day, it wasn't uncommon for people to get swallowed up in the earth when they weren't doing things that were good for the environment or for humanity. And I was wondering if the doctor heard anything about that on a spiritual level.
Let's see. The first question was?
How deep is a typical sinkhole?
How deep is a typical, yeah. You know, it's really tough to say. What is a typical sinkhole? Generally in a range, they generally from a few feet, depending how fast the soil fills up, to hundreds of feet. So typically probably in the tens of feet for the typical size sinkholes.
We were looking at some pictures of them, and photographs of one in Guatemala City, for example, shows a huge, seemingly bottomless hole in the surface of the city. What happened in that specific situation?
Right. Now, that's one that's not a natural geologic system. That one was, I'm pretty sure, was a large stormwater drain system that they had built that was well over 100 feet below the surface at that point, covered up by volcanic ash. So when that collapsed, that was a very large system that they had there to take all that soil, and that is one of the most dramatic pictures you'll ever see of a sinkhole. That, you're right, it looks like a bottomless pit. So yes, they can get well over 100 feet deep, depending how deep that void is.
And as far as sinkholes in the Bible?
That one I don't think I can address. That one's not one we haven't really discussed much in the scientific community. Yes, we do know that people have been swallowed by sinkholes, like the gentleman in Florida recently. But they tend to occur when people. We don't have a lot of deaths that we know of that we've been able to locate, on an annual basis related to sinkhole collapses.
Okay, thank you, Dina, for your call. Now let's go to Jan calling from Staten Island. Hi, Jan, you're on WNYC.
Hi, my question is about the sinkhole disaster at Bayou Corne, C-O-R-N-E, in Louisiana. It began, I guess, last August and was still continuing to grow. Last time I checked the news, in March.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. This has been a spectacular sinkhole event in the U.S. When we talk about triggers, this one's actually happening in a salt dome in an oil and gas area. Salt is a very tight geologic unit, and it's been very good for storing waste, various human waste from oil and gas drilling and things like that. Also, salt is used in oil and gas industry and lots of other industries, so they will go in and mine the salt by injecting water. If you ever take salt, put it in a glass, and then put water, warm water on it, what happens? It dissolves. So what they've done there is they've created a cavern in the salt dome when they pulled it out. And we think that happens too close to the edge of that salt dome to the next rock, and they had to collapse. And that's collapsed in. It's ongoing. It's like you said, that happened last summer, about a year ago now. And from last I saw, I believe that sinkhole is still growing because that's a very deep, several thousand foot deep hole in the ground beneath that salt dome.
And how wide is that specific one?
I know it covers probably at least 10 acres. It's a very large hole, and it's actually filled with water, so it's kind of got a slurry on top.
And a lot of people have been evacuated.
Right, and the town there, Bayou Corne, actually does not sit directly on the salt dome. There's other environmental things happening there that people are still trying to get a handle on. There's actually methane gas that's been bubbling up in the bayou and in the water and around the town. And, of course, just the concern of methane, the explosiveness, and the gas itself that they evacuated the town for.
Jan, thank you so much for your call. We're going to go now to George calling from Manhattan. Hi, George. You're on WNYC.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call. Yes, we had an experience on 2nd Avenue here in Manhattan where the street literally collapsed beneath the surface, and the asphalt was drawn in almost like a whirlpool. And nobody wanted to accept any responsibility for it. They came over four or five different people that could have caused it at one time. But the city said, well, it might have been caused by this, or it might have been caused by that, or it might have been caused by something else. They all acknowledged the existence of the sinkhole and that possibly people could fall into it, but they didn't really come up with how it was caused or why it was caused. What would cause asphalt to literally collapse in almost like a whirlpool? Like you see these often in the street. What causes that other than pipes?
Well, for that to happen, you have to have some sort of a void underneath the ground. So basically, like I said before, these water mains and storm drains or man-made caves, you have to have something under there like that for something to collapse into. So they should have, you would think they would have maps underneath the city of all these various utility lines for this to happen. I think as we look at as our country gets on in years, obviously our infrastructure is aging. There has to be something there. New York City is not on top of what we call a karst area, where you would have natural collapses.
It's not.
Yeah, can you explain what a karst area is?
Okay. So karst is a term that we use that is a terrain that's characterized by the sinkholes, caves, and large springs because rocks underlaying that are dissolvable. And the rocks under New York City are generally very hard granites and schists and things like other rock types that generally do not dissolve. So that's why I don't think anything in Queens or in New York City would be considered a natural event.
George, thank you so much for your call. We also have a question on Twitter. Kim on Twitter is asking, how do they fix massive sinkholes? Are they possible to fix them or even small ones?
Small ones, definitely. We do know in areas where they want to be able to continue to use the land that they can come in, and you dig out all. They generally come in with construction equipment. Geotechnical engineers dig out the soil down to bedrock, find where the drain is, that hole that goes into the bedrock, into the void underneath, and grout it. They'll put riprap in and then cover it with concrete to be able to recover the land. For really large sinkholes, usually you don't really not much you can do for those. A good example is the one of the most famous sinkholes in the U.S., occurred in Winter Park, Florida in the early 1980s, took out an entire city block, including a Porsche dealership. Many Porsches lost their lives those that day. Actually, I think they pulled those cars out. But that was a very large sinkhole. It was, you know, a city block, and I believe it's now a pond. They actually use it now as a recreational pond.
Who is legally responsible for a sinkhole? Would it be the property owner or the city itself?
That's a tough one for each jurisdiction. One thing that's very tough for me to comment on is the whole aspect of insurance. I know that each state has a little bit different ways they handle insurance claims with sinkholes. Some actually you have to have some sort of a rider on for sinkholes. Others maybe not. But for responsibility, I think it's generally within the jurisdiction. If it's on a large property, it's probably the homeowners.
We are speaking with Dr. Randall Orndorff, the director of the U.S. Geological Survey's Eastern Geology and Paleoclimate Science Center. We're talking about sinkholes today on Please Explain. You can call us up at 212-433-9692 if you'd like to ask a question. And we'll go right now to Peter, who's calling from Manhattan. Hi, Peter. You're on WNYC.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Peter. You're on the air.
Yeah, okay, sir. New York is currently being overrun by developers, and my fear is that can this earth support the amount of building the illustrious mayor is attempting to put up?
Yeah, that's a good question. As far as development, I mean, we are growing as a population. What about with sinkholes?
Well, definitely with sinkholes. Now, I wouldn't worry so much. Most of the New York area would not be prone to the geologic conditions for sinkholes. But we have to realize that, I said about 20% of the U.S. is underlain by dissolvable rock, and we can't not just live there. And as a matter of fact, we have quite a few cities that actually are built on sinkhole-prone areas. St. Louis, Nashville, Knoxville, Allentown, Pennsylvania, these cities. And although they do have some risks and some collapses at times, they engineer it quite well to be able to make sure you anchor into the rock itself and not just the soil. So it's something that we can live with, but we just have to be very vigilant in how we develop that land.
I've been speaking with Randall Orndorff, the director of the U.S. Geologic Survey's Eastern Geology Paleoclimate Science Center. Randall, thanks so much for being on today's Please Explain on the Leonard Lopate Show.
My pleasure, Richard.